Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News for October 31st, 2012. I'm David Knight, and here are our top stories.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, on the heels of Hurricane Sandy, storm looters strike all over the Northeast. Plus, cops tase 10-year-old boy for refusing to clean the patrol car. And we have three powerful interviews, the first with Wade Hicks. Then David Ortiz interviews Gary Johnson, Libertarian candidate for president. And finally, David Knight interviews the New Jersey weed man who was recently acquitted of all charges due to jury nullification. All this and more on tonight's InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, although we were criticized by the Daily Beast and the Atlantic for reporting that people were tweeting about looting in the wake of Hurricane Sandy, now they're tweeting about what they actually looted. In the article, Shameless Looters Display Stolen Goods on Twitter, they're using the hashtag Sandy Loot Crew, and people are bragging about what they've taken and organizing for more looting as they said they were going to do. Now, we were accused of fear-mongering by the Atlantic and the Daily Beast, and they went even further to try to debunk the idea that looting was ever a serious problem. Now, although some of these are possibly hoaxes and some of the others were possibly hoaxes, I think there's some real stuff going on here because another article that we have today on InfoWars says, looters plague hurricane victims post-Sandy. Actually, there's widespread looting that is undergoing in both Atlantic City and quite a bit in New York City. But of course, now you can believe it because the mainstream media is reporting it. Also in hurricane news, Obama ordered the DHS to control hurricanes. This is another story that we have reported and taken criticism for. And yet, as Melissa Moulton pointed out, we actually have the documents archived by the Washington Post showing that NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, acknowledged three things. One, that the Project Storm Fury existed. InfoWars has interviewed many times in the past Ben Livingston, a former Navy physicist who briefed President Johnson on the effectiveness of weather control back in the 1960s. And Livingston asserts that hurricane control was a national priority of the government more than 40 years ago and that the technology is fully operational to control weather at the time. Also interesting in this document is the fact that NOAA has refused to participate in DHS's HAMP program. That's a Hurricane Aerosol and Microphysics program. In doing that, they turned down a $64 million project, and they've had their funding cut every year since. Now, the question I have, possibly you have too, is why is the Department of Homeland doing hurricane research? Are they just megalomaniacs trying to get their tentacles in every aspect of the government? I mean, that's something we should worry about, because wherever the DHS goes, we lose due process, we lose our freedoms, and they get more bureaucratic power. Or are they getting involved because they want to make disasters that they can then use as pretenses for gaining more power for the central government? Well, we could do a whole program on cops with tasers. And we have two articles today that were in the news. The first one is an accidental tasering. A toddler was accidentally tasered by a San Diego police officer. Now, this officer shot his taser to bring down a fleeing suspect, and one of the barbs actually hit a 3-year-old girl. He did not pull the trigger and shock her, but she was stuck with it nevertheless. But, you know, tasering has become such a common thing. It's really disturbing. And this next story is extremely disturbing. In this case, an officer, a cop, the title is Cops Taser 10-Year-Old Boy for Refusing to Clean a Patrol Car. This officer was demonstrating what police do on school career day. And what he did was he told this 10-year-old boy to clean out his patrol vehicle. And Officer Chris Webb, according to the lawsuit, is claimed to have stated, "Let me show you what happens to people who did not listen to the police," when the 10-year-old boy refused to clean out the police vehicle. He then pointed the taser at the boy, according to the report, fired two barbs directly into the 10-year-old's chest, electrifying him and causing him to black out. He then extracted the barbs from the child's chest, leaving scarring that looked, quote, like cigarette burns. And instead of calling emergency medical personnel, Officer Webb pulled out the barbs and took the boy to the school's principal's office. Now, I guess it's just really hard to understand how a cop could be that calloused that he could do that to a 10-year-old boy. I mean, what kind of a power trip has a sociopath got to be on to do something like that? The amazing thing to me is that there's nothing about the police department disciplining this person. I mean, he shouldn't be disciplined. He shouldn't be suspended. He needs to be fired, if not jailed, for doing something like that. But what we have, it also states in the article, police guidelines on tasers state that the weapons must only be used as a last resort when an officer is under direct threat. But we're seeing this constantly. Earlier this month here in Austin, we had a man who was having a seizure tasered by the police. And that sent him into cardiac arrest, and he has permanent brain damage from that. Another lawsuit is being fired with that. But is it too much to ask that we have rules of engagement that are actually enforced against police officers that these tasers not be used like electronic whips on those of us who aren't police officers? And finally today, we have a report on Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson is the subject of a poll in Colorado, and it looks like he may actually be hurting Obama in Colorado. Part of the reason for that is a very popular ballot initiative in Colorado on marijuana. It's not medical marijuana. There's been a lot of ballot issues on medical marijuana, but this one is actually on marijuana itself and would allow the use of marijuana even for recreational purposes. It's such a popular ballot issue in Colorado that pollsters believe that it may hurt Obama with young people. And, of course, Gary Johnson is expected to pull support from many Republicans and libertarians who supported Ron Paul. The thing that makes this interesting is that Colorado is one of the closest races in the nation. Both Obama and Romney are tied at 48% each. So Gary Johnson is going to have a big effect on that. And we have an interview with Gary Johnson. And David Ortiz is talking to him about the election and what their goals are for this election. We'll be going to that interview with Gary Johnson after our interview with Wade Hicks. And that brings us to our quote of the day. Ideas are the great warriors of the world, and a war that has no idea behind it is simply a brutality. That's James A. Garfield. Well, today is October 31st, and we've got zombies on the cover of the new InfoWars magazine, so we've got our second installment of our zombie footage here. We've actually got hidden cameras of real zombies. We're going to go to that video, and then we'll be right back after a short break.
Fluoride is good. The chemtrails are great.
Mainstream media. They tell the truth.
Fluoride is good for you.
The Federal Reserve is good for us. Chemtrail big. They smell good. Good for air. GMO food good. Obama tell truth. Romney save country. Mainstream media tell truth.
Obama. Romney. Vaccines. Good. Good. Television. Good. Romney, vaccines, GMO, good, good. Obama, he buy me phone. Obama buy me phone, good.
I vote Obama, he give us phone. He gonna do more.
Keep Obama in president, you know. Yeah. Obama, boom,
you disability, you welfare, food stamp, you get free phone. Obama, another 4 years.
Romney sucks.
Bad.
Obama, good.
Romney, good.
GMO, good.
Fluoride, good for teeth.
TSA, gropey, good.
TSA, stick hand in my pants for safety.
Drones overhead, good. Vaccine in arm, good.
Mainstream media tell you truth. Nuke Iran,
good.
Romney nuke Iran. Obama support unconstitutional Patriot Act.
Romney support NDAA, good.
Obama support that too.
Romney Medicare, good.
Obama Medicare, good.
Drones, Romney, good.
Drones, Obama, good.
Romney, good.
Obama, good.
Romney, good.
Obama, good.
Romney, good.
Romney, good.
The presentation you have just witnessed is a test. Are you conscious? Are you aware that you are being manipulated? Or have you descended into a dreamlike zombie state that much of the public is suffering from? In the power-packed November issue of InfoWars magazine, we detail, with the scientific facts in four separate articles, the proof that the public is being brainwashed. Our brainwaves are lowering, our IQs are dropping, and we are being turned into nothing more than biological androids. You can buy copies of InfoWars magazine at cost in bundles of 10 up to 100 and give them to your friends and family. It's time to shake humanity out of the trance that they're in. And the November issue of InfoWars magazine is designed to do just that. Sign up for a subscription or secure copies at cost in bulk today at InfoWarsStore.com.
Welcome back. Our next story ties in pretty well with our guest that follows it. Big Brother is encroaching farther and farther on your private property. An amazing article today, the court has okayed warrantless use of hidden surveillance cameras. This is a case where the DEA installed multiple covert digital surveillance cameras on private property in order to spy and without getting a warrant. U.S. District Judge William Griesbach ruled that warrants aren't necessary because it upheld, and listen to this, the use of technology as a substitute for ordinary police surveillance. Now, technology is not a substitute for police surveillance. Just because we're using a different technology doesn't mean that we give up our rights to be searched. And surveillance is a search. But the Supreme Court has already rejected in January warrantless GPS tracking. They rejected prior to that warrantless thermal imaging. They have coming up before them, but they've not yet determined whether warrantless cell phone tracking is going to be allowed. So they will be also reviewing this case. I'm sure it will go to the Supreme Court. In this particular case, there were no trespassing signs that were posted throughout the heavily wooded 22-acre property, and it also had a heavy gate. Now, the legal fiction of all this is based on a 1984 Supreme Court ruling called Oliver versus United States, and it found, amazingly, that open fields could be searched without warrants because they're not covered by the Fourth Amendment. Well, you might want to look at your copy of the Fourth Amendment because mine doesn't have any exceptions for open fields. And this is all based on a legal fiction called curtilage. Now, that's a term for the area that immediately surrounds your home. But what we're seeing here is a gradual encroachment. First, they say that if they don't, that they don't need a warrant to put surveillance cameras or to spy on you on the outer edges of your property. They only need it to go into the curtilage or if they're going to go inside of your house. And that's just a creeping encroachment on your rights. It's the same sort of thing as if your neighbor were to put their fence on your property and leave it there for a while. If we don't say something about these encroachments, then we basically lose our rights. And that's exactly what's going on with Wade Hicks's case. Now, Wade Hicks, if you remember, we've covered him twice on the nightly news, and he was on radio news earlier today with Alex Jones. Wade is the fellow who was put on a no-fly list without being notified. And midway through his journey to see his wife, who's in the military in Japan, he was taken off the plane in Hawaii and told that he couldn't fly. So he was basically stranded in Hawaii, and he was stranded there from a Sunday to a Thursday until that restriction was lifted. And Wade is on his way home now. He finally was able to get back home, and he's on his way home, and he's a longtime listener, and he was kind enough to swing by Austin on his way home to Mississippi from California, and had him in the studio earlier with Alex Jones, and we've got him in the studio right now. Well, Wade, thank you for coming in and seeing us here at the station. You're on your way home, and we really appreciate you taking the time to come by and tell people more about your story. You know, it's the sort of thing where a lot of people's instinct would just be to kind of hunker down and try to keep a low profile and just hope that this goes away, but you kind of met it head on, and that's a good thing to do.
Well, that's the thing. If you're in that type of situation, you have to keep your head screwed on straight. Don't get emotional and just do whatever you know or what you think is the best thing to do. And for me, it was going to the media, going to my friends, because those were really the only people that were going to be able to help me. The government wasn't going to do anything to help me. They were just doing their whole bureaucratic nightmare stuff. So I could have been there 3 months had I not been as proactive as I was trying to get this story out.
That's right. And they still, to this day, have not given you any information as to why you were put on the list or what your current status is, whether you're on the list or whether you're off of the list. Right?
No, they've never. I've asked for it in writing. They've never given me anything in writing to say that I was on the list. They never gave me anything that says I was off the list. And it completely throws everything we know about the Constitution and due process out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very dangerous situation, not just for you, but for everybody. Because when the government can secretly accuse somebody of something, you still have no idea what they thought was wrong. And they won't tell you. When they can secretly accuse you and then secretly impose penalties on you, they can do that to anybody. I mean,
well, absolutely. And what's really scary is there's a lot of members of the military that their spouses do use military aircraft to fly Space Available when they're on deployment to go meet their loved ones that are deployed. And that's what I was doing. I was going using a travel authorization from the military to go see my wife. And, you know, if I could be stopped mid-flight, put on a no-fly list, and detained in Hawaii, basically indefinitely until they decided to let me go, mm-hmm. this could happen to any military member's spouse or children even. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's extremely alarming, that they're going after not only people that are outspoken like myself, but going after military spouses and military members directly, basically saying, oh, well, you know, you're questionable, so you can't fly because we said so.
All right. So where do you go from here? What are your plans? Because you said you're not going to let this just go and let it drop since you're able to move now, presumably.
Well, I can't. I mean, Art of War states if your enemy's retreating, attack them. And, of course, I mean that, of course, in all legal remedies of attack.
Right.
But basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to engage my senators and my congressmen in Mississippi, and I'm going to demand that they have some dialogue on this on the floor of the House, on the floor of the Senate, to revamp this entire no-fly program, because obviously the system is broken and it needs to be fixed, and Congress has the power and the authority to fix this complete thing. It's shameful when you go to an airport that the TSA, that has no sworn oath to defend the Constitution or anything, they're no different than mall security guards, except they get to put your hands down your pants mm-hmm. when the mall security guards don't.
Right. And this, in your case, takes it to another level, because we're back to something like the Spanish Inquisition, where they say, we can't tell you what's going on with this because that would violate national security. Well, they can make that claim about anything, right? Anything can be national
Absolutely.
Security because nobody's able to answer that. And, you know, if you don't get your day in court, if they don't accuse you of anything, you don't have a chance to dispute that that national security is involved.
Well, that's the thing. There's no recourse.
Right.
If due process is involved, you get your day in court, and then you get to go in front of a jury of your peers if they don't rig the juries like they do in a lot of federal cases. Mm-hmm. I don't know any other country that has a 95% conviction rating besides China and Russia. Mm-hmm. And, well, if you look at them, they're not nowhere near as free as the United States is.
Right. Yeah, that's something else we're talking about tonight is jury nullification and the importance of juries. But, you know, I guess the key thing is we really appreciate the fact that you're speaking out, that you're continuing to pursue this, and that you're just not going to let this drop, because we're not going to let it drop either here. You know, we're not going to, we'll cover your case, we'll cover other cases, because I'm sure there are going to be other, we've already had a lot of cases where people falsely been, wrongly been put on a no-fly list, children even, you know, who could not be a threat to anybody. So this is something of a, you know, bureaucracy that is just not answerable to anybody, and like anyone, they can make mistakes, but, you know, they're not owning up to their mistakes, and we can't see their mistakes because they're keeping them secret.
Yeah, there's no reason that the no-fly list cannot incorporate due process. One way that they could easily fix this entire problem is to place someone under investigation, have the due process, t- tell them that you can't fly because you're an investigation for this. Let them lawyer up and let a judge decide ultimately whether or not they get put in the no-fly list. Everything else, I mean, if a child molester and a murderer has a right to due process, why doesn't an average American citizen that hasn't even been accused with the crime?
Yeah, good point, good point. Now, today we have the ongoing Hurricane Sandy that's happening
right
up in the Northeast and everything. And being in Mississippi, one of the things that got you possibly on their radar, as you said, was the fact that you're in the Mississippi Preparedness organization. Mm-hmm. And you're suspicious that perhaps somebody might have been thinking that this is some kind of militia or something.
Well,
and
right. Well, the Mississippi Preparedness Project really started after Hurricane Katrina when the federal government failed in their response to Katrina. In Mississippi, we didn't have half the issues that they had in Louisiana because the people took care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in Mississippi are relatively self-sufficient. They have weeks' worth of food stockpiled normally. You know, they may not even be preppers, but that's just the way that the culture and the environment is in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
We know that hurricanes come, and when hurricanes come, we know that we're probably going to go without power for three or more weeks. So we have to have at least a month of non-perishable foods sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
Just for that event and keep
well,
it.
Well, it's a reasonable thing.
Out.
I mean, most people used to be that way. Most people, it's like having a bank account so that you're not living from paycheck to paycheck. I mean, you know, if people are going to do that and be responsible, having food and being able to protect themselves during an emergency, because you never know when that's going to happen, that's a reasonable thing for people to do too. People in Mississippi are just not as dependent on the government as a lot of people who live in, say, cities are, that sort of thing.
Well, what the government's really scared of as far as preparedness is concerned is they understand that our founders were preppers.
Mm-hmm.
They were prepared for any foreseen or unforeseen event that would happen in their lives. They had firearms. They had food. They had honest money. They had ways to provide for their families should work not happen or a crop would fail. They had ways to provide for their families. And now what the government seems to be wanting to do to us is to make us completely dependent on them for
yes.
everything.
Yes.
So we'll just bow down in blind subservience and say, oh, thank you for that meal. You know, oh, well, we'll do whatever you say as long as you feed us.
That's right.
And we're getting to that point right now that people are so willing to trade their liberty for security, it's not even funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, when they moved the scanners out of Boston Airport, I saw mainstream media reports where they were talking to people and saying, you know, do you like these things? Oh, yeah, they make me feel safe. They make them feel safe. They don't provide any safety. They don't, you know, they actually are irradiating them, right? Which they've admitted now. But, you know, even though it's not doing anything to enhance their security, even though it's exposing them to dangerous radiation, the idea is that it makes them feel safe.
Well, I'm not a terrorist, and I'm sure the people that are walking through the body scanners that are looking at this interview say, well, I'm not a terrorist. Why do you keep doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep just walking through those machines like, well, I don't want to make any waves. Well, guess what? I made waves. I'm still here. They didn't kill me yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be vocal about it.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I just hope that me being vocal about this doesn't have any sort of negative retaliatory impact on my wife's naval career.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it would, I mean, it just shows completely how messed up our country has become. And we have the right to fix it. We have the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we have the ballot box, we do have some means. But if they take the ballot box away from us, as our founder said, there's only one thing left.
That's right. That's right. Well, you have to speak out. And you know, you've done the right thing. And certainly, once they pull you out of the crowd for no apparent reason, your best defense is to be public about it. So you've done the right thing. Thank you for stopping by here. We really appreciate you coming by, and we really appreciate you fighting this. And we want to, you know, keep in touch with you and let us know what's going on. We want to know if you get any answers, and we want to know if you don't get any answers.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to keep you all advised the whole process.
Great, great. Thank you very much, Wade.
Thank you.
Sure appreciate it, Wade. Wade Hicks. Well, you always need to speak up for your rights. Make sure that you don't lose them. As we talked about before, they're always lost through gradual encroachment. And next week, with less than a week left to the election, you have a chance to speak up at the ballot box. And we're going to be covering that with live election coverage. Election night from 5 to midnight Central Time. We'll be giving you results, and we'll be giving you commentary, as well as commentary not just from us, but from people like Gerald Celente and many of the guests that you see on our show from time to time. And as part of our election coverage, we've got a breaking interview coming up next with Governor Gary Johnson, third-party candidate, Libertarian nominee for president.
Every 4 years, the United States of America hears the drumbeat of billions of campaign dollar TAC ads, meaningless debate with empty analysis and poll after poll after poll. This can only mean one thing. It's time to pick our globalist puppet leader.
We're going to be left with a choice of a lesser of two evils. And I'm saying I don't go out with evils. I don't deal with evils. I don't do business with evils. I don't hang out with evils. Why would I vote for an evil to run my life or run my country?
Will it be globalist puppet A or puppet B?
They continue to vote for these Democrats and Republicans, the people that are wrecking our country, and yet they still vote for them.
Unlike North Korea and China, we Americans have the illusion of choice this November 6th.
I think that a lot of votes are going to be stolen.
I don't know how you could possibly have voter fraud when your son owns the voting machines.
1.4 million votes were lost, spoiled, as they call them in the biz, through these so-called glitches.
The choice is not up to you. Which management team from Slavery Incorporated will run our country into oblivion for the next 4 years? Tune in to InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.tv this Tuesday, November 6th, as another meaningless pageant is played out.
The two-party system has ruined our nation. They've kept us in a state of perpetual war, driven our jobs overseas, bankrupted us, overtaxed, and overspent us. But here's the good news. 5% of the vote in 2012 is all it takes to end the two-party system in America for good. This year, do something revolutionary. Cast a protest vote that counts. My name is Gary Johnson, and I approve this message. Live free.
And there you go. You just saw Governor Gary Johnson's one of his latest campaign commercials. He wants to hit at least that 5% threshold. Obviously, he wants to win the election, but at the very least, he wants to really rock the system and shake up the system by getting at least 5% in the general election that's coming up next week. So we are now joined by Governor Gary Johnson, presidential candidate. He represents the Libertarian Party. Governor, thank you so much for joining us here on InfoWars Nightly News.
David, it's great to be on with you. And yeah, the 5%, I mean, it has a chance to kick the two-party system in the rear end. The notion of matching funds, the notion of not having to qualify in states where currently so much money and time are taken up with just ballot access. Now, it's complex, but overall, a 5% strategy just is a game changer.
Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, federal funds. I mean, how much federal funding would you be able to receive next presidential cycle, or the Libertarian Party next presidential cycle, if you hit that 5%?
Well, it would be a minimum of $5 million. And keep in mind that right now we've raised about $2 million. Excuse me. We've raised about $2 million to Obama and Romney's $2 billion. I mean, we're talking about one thousandth of what they have raised. So if you talk about $5 million in federal matching funds, that in and of itself would be a game changer. I mean, that begets a lot more contribution, a lot more attention. And right now, 30% of Americans just know my name. They don't know who I am. They just know my name. And so, you know, this is the bad news. The good news is that when people do understand the issues, there's a lot of support for this. And of course, we saw that with Ron Paul and the fact that this is a message that's just too important to go unsaid.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about issues in a second. We'll have plenty of time for that. But back to this 5%, because this is a huge moral victory if we, the people, get this. Do you think you're going to get that 5%, hit that 5% threshold?
Well, the problem is right now is that the polls don't include my name. When the polls include my name, you know, that's kind of an education in and of itself. Gee, I heard the name Gary Johnson. Who is he? Let me check that out. Well, for the most part, more than 9 out of 10 polls do not include my name. So when it is included, it's anywhere between 3%, 6%. I realize some are lower, some are higher, but I think I hate to set an expectation here. The best a libertarian candidate has ever done running for president of the United States is right at 1% of the vote.
Now, let's say you don't hit 5%, which we're all obviously hoping that you do. But let's say you get 4%. I mean, does the Libertarian Party, are they eligible for more federal funds than they've previously received?
To my knowledge, it is this 5% that makes you a bona fide major party as opposed to anything less. So this 5% is the threshold.
Now, one more question. From what I understand, you're going to be on the ballot in 48 states and Washington, D.C. Certainly, that's very impressive. But I assume then you were not able to get on the ballot in Oklahoma and Michigan. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm officially a write-in candidate in Michigan, officially. And Oklahoma can bear the onus of excluding all third parties, something that I think the citizens of Oklahoma aren't as responsible for as policymakers. Vote out all the policymakers. This is something that shouldn't exist in this country. David, as governor of New Mexico, I'm not a hypocrite here. I signed a number of pieces of legislation making it easy to be on the ballot for a third party, believing that that's a good thing.
And very briefly, and then we'll move on to issues. Why were you not able to get on the ballot in Michigan and Oklahoma?
Well, Michigan, in both cases, really, politically driven. Oklahoma has the onus of you have to have 50,000 signatures. 50,000 signatures just to get on the ballot. We submitted 59,000. They refused to, they disqualified more than 9,000 signatures. Then I became the Americans elect candidate in Oklahoma. They had enough signatures to qualify Oklahoma for Americans elect. The courts threw that out. So these are Republicans and Democrats in elected positions that are bound to the Republican Party. Same thing in Michigan. Apparently we filed the paperwork 3 minutes late, although we would have maintained that we filed it on time and that we didn't even need to file it in the first place because I never asked to be on the ballot. They put me on the ballot and they required documentation to say that we wanted off the ballot when we never wanted on it in the first place.
It's amazing. They go after these, they don't go after these bankers, but they'll go after you for being allegedly 3 minutes late.
Well, that's exactly the case. And just so that there's no misconception, it's really difficult to get on the ballot in this many states. You know, there are other third-party candidates, but the Green Party comes in second place being on the ballot in about 30 states. So trying to put this into perspective, it really is, there is only one third party, the Libertarian Party, on the ballot in effectively all the states.
Okay, well, thank you for shedding light on that. Now, let's get to the issues here. You recently filed a lawsuit against the Presidential Commission on Debates. Clearly, you weren't allowed in the debates. What happened?
Well, the Presidential Debate Commission is made up of Republicans and Democrats with absolutely no interest whatsoever in seeing a third party on stage. So that's what you've got. And There anything about including candidates? Ross Perot was the last third-party candidate that appeared in a debate. I think if I would have gotten to appear in any of these debates, that I would be the next president of the United States, given just a lack of coming up with the solutions that that we do face in this country surrounding the issues that we face.
But what did they say? I mean, from what I understand, your vice presidential candidate, Judge Gray, was going to, you know, bring up the lawsuit. He was going to defend his case. I mean, did they ever give you a ruling? What did they say?
Well, they said that it didn't, it did not warrant an emergency. So both these suits are alive. It's just that they weren't heard in a timely enough way to include us in the debates. They will be heard at a later time, and we still think that we will prevail in these debates because I think we have some terrific arguments to basically suggest that, you know, in a head-to-head poll against Obama, I poll way ahead of the 15% criteria or threshold that they set.
So the matter will be heard, and maybe it affects, you know, what occurs the next presidential cycle. Is that right?
Exactly. And there could be, like I say, we'll see how this plays out. But it's alive and well, and we're kicking and screaming, and rightfully so.
Now, Governor, what were your thoughts on the presidential debates, what both candidates had to say?
Well, just much to do about nothing. I mean, when you've got the two of them arguing over who's going to spend more money on Medicare, look, we need to slash Medicare spending. We need to balance the federal budget now. Medicare is a benefit that you and I put $30,000 into, and we receive a $100,000 benefit. That is not sustainable in any way, shape, or form. We ought to have a raging debate and discussion in this country over how we provide a healthcare safety net for those over 65, but to continue to do what we're doing, we're going to experience a monetary collapse if we continue this unsustainable spending.
Now, let me sound like a liberal here and give you a liberal argument. What about those that say, yes, Governor, we obviously get more than what we put in, but that's because the wealthy people, you know, offset that cost, offset the additional money we're receiving? What would you say to them?
Well, that's totally bogus. However wealthy you are, whatever you put into Medicare, you can expect three times the return based on what you put in, regardless of how much you put in. That's Medicare. Unsustainable in any way, shape, or form. You know, we talk about $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities moving forward. Well, that's Medicare at the top of that heap. Look, we balance the federal budget tomorrow. All that unfunded liability goes away, because basically what we would be doing today by balancing the budget is we would take away those unfunded liabilities. We would be living within our means.
So the wealthy cannot offset, you know, that deficit.
No, it's not possible to offset that deficit, nor is it possible to offset the deficit when it comes to Medicaid, health care for the poor. And then, you know, going back to the debates, Romney is saying he's going to spend more money on the military when we need to slash military spending also. And I'll start with a preface here. We need and owe ourselves an obligation to provide ourselves with a strong national defense. But defense is the operative word, not offense, not nation building. And our military interventions continue with us creating a lot more enemies to this country than we have friends.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Governor, but I heard that you were earlier this year hassled by the TSA and you filed a couple of complaints against them. Is that true?
No, that's not true, but I am hassled by TSA every day of the week, and it's the constitution-free zone, and I hate being subject to unwarranted search and seizure. I hate it.
Okay. All right, yeah, that's kind of on the internet, you know, in various blogs. So you were not hassled by, I mean, you were hassled, but you didn't formally file complaints against them.
No. I mean, I'm hassled along with everyone else who travels.
What would you do about the TSA if elected president?
Well, I would like to abolish the TSA. I think we should leave airport security to the airports, to the airlines, to states, municipalities. If I'm elected president and Congress doesn't want to abolish the TSA, I guarantee you, because I would control TSA, I would control who heads up TSA, the TSA immediately, overnight, would become less intrusive and as safe, and everybody would notice it. I mean, these are the things that you can do elected to office, controlling rules and regulations. I would de facto control rules and regulations surrounding TSA.
Now, speaking of the nanny state, every day I see stories online of cops, you know, just being abusive towards people. We're not, you know, I'm not trying to demonize every officer that's out there. It's not about being an officer. It's about power. Whenever people are given great power, there's always people who abuse that power. But every day I just see repeated stories about, you know, a cop tasering a 10-year-old child or an elderly woman or things of that nature. What is your take on the growing police state and, you know, abuse of power by the police?
Well, David, you hit it on the head. I mean, anybody in a position of power utilizes that power in ways that really infringe on other people's rights. I mean, I look at the traffic, the crossing guard that you know, you're traveling in your car, and I just have the sense that they step out to stop me just to show me that they can stop me. And but this is power, and this is what exists in this country. And when you have a growing police state, these intrusions become just that. They become more and more intrusive. We have a growing police state in this country. Regardless of Obama or Romney getting elected, I think we're going to see a continued heightened state of a police state.
Now, how do you prevent that from happening? What would you do if you were president?
Well, now you're back to rules and regulations. And if Congress won't repeal the Patriot Act, if Congress, you know, I would have never signed the National Defense Authorization Act. But that said, we've got TSA now moving onto the highways, moving into bus stations, train stations, just on the highway in general, making stops. Well, that can come to a stop because of a president that would control all the rules and regulations and rein back these agencies to what they were originally intended, and in TSA's case, airports.
Now, in your opinion, Governor, is this world run by a handful of powerful banks?
In my opinion, this world is run by a powerful group of whether they're bankers, whether they're media. They are people that are in charge of what we hear and what we think and what we're able to do in ways that are completely undetected by all of us. And this is the opportunity here with this election, with the next election. Voting for me, I think, is to really just give that one the swiftest boot in the rear end that you could possibly give.
Now, Governor, obviously you were a former governor. Have you heard of the Bilderberg Group? And if so, what are your thoughts on this group?
You know, I've heard about it. I've done some Wikipedia is what I've read about it. And I don't have an opinion, yay or nay, as to their significance, but look, I was excluded from debates in the Republican primary. This was a decision that occurred in boardrooms. Who made those decisions? I can't tell you who made them, but they were made, and they were made in ways that excluded me unfairly, and nobody was able to even notice that happening. I could point to hundreds of different reasons. It would only be a guess, but this is an example of how our lives get controlled by individuals that own the world, if you will.
Okay, but you don't know what goes behind, you know, behind closed doors, these Bilderberg meetings.
I don't, and I know that you all offer conjecture on that, but I sure don't.
Okay, and we're just going to jump around on different topics here, because this is the last time we're going to be able to talk to you before the election, and we're going to talk about mainstream issues you know, further down in this interview, but I've never spoken to a governor about this. What's your take on Bohemian Grove? Have you heard of Bohemian Grove?
Yes, I have.
What is your take on that? What goes on behind closed doors there?
Well, I actually got to visit with the family, which I think is on par with Bohemian Grove. And from what I see, it's really just it's a men's club, if you will, and they get together and talk about issues of the day, and very powerful, influential people that make up these groups, but nothing sinister, nothing at all sinister, and that's my observation.
Okay, so you haven't heard chat from other, you know, elite politicians saying, hey, Governor, you're going to come over to Bohemian Grove with us, or you haven't, you know, they haven't told you about anything sinister going on back there?
No, I don't have any knowledge of anything sinister.
Okay. Now, Governor, your take on the state of the U.S. economy and the world economy?
I think we're on the verge of a monetary collapse sooner than later, and it has to do with unsustainable spending. I am promising to submit a balanced budget to Congress in the year 2013 if elected, which would be a $1.4 trillion reduction in federal spending. I think if we don't get that under control, we can expect a monetary collapse, and very simply a monetary collapse. The dollars we have don't buy a thing because of the accompanying inflation that goes along with printing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar we're spending.
Okay. Now, Governor, we talked about this earlier on in the interview. Do you believe that the system is trying to create a one-world centralized government?
I think that is a logical conclusion. The Federal Reserve, the foreign banks, the World Bank. Yes, this is the direction that we're headed. And look, I don't think that we want to be told in this country what to do, and yet we tell others what they should do, and that includes our military interventions to see vital American interests carried out. I ask the rhetorical question, what are vital American interests that require us militarily intervening, killing innocent civilians in these countries, our own men and service women dying, our own men and service women coming back with their limbs blown off?
Now, Governor, I want to respect your time. Do you have a couple more minutes? How many more minutes?
I've got a couple more minutes here, David. I appreciate you having me on.
Okay. Governor, your take on global warming. I've never really talked to you about global warming. Do you believe in global warming?
You know, I accept that global warming is happening. I accept that it's man-caused. That said, I'm opposed to cap and trade. I think it would be devastating to the economy. I think that the best indicator of good environment is good economy. We as consumers are demanding less carbon emission. We're getting less carbon emission. We're getting more conservation, which you and I, you know, that's what we're all engaged in. So moving forward, look, good economy, good environment, don't enact cap and trade. It would be a whole lot of money raised with no benefit whatsoever to the environment.
Now, how is the public demanding minimal emissions? I think I heard you say just a second ago the government, the people are demanding it. How so?
Well, just the notion that we want our cars to go further. We want less carbon in the air. I mean, I think we're certainly for coal to be competitive going forward, they're going to have to scrub their coal more. And that's something that the coal industry is going to have to do. But just as we have now a checkoff for alternative energies, we do have choices as consumers, and we are opting as consumers to have the cleanest energy that we can have. And of course, natural gas has become plentiful with the discovery of Marcellus oil in this country because of Bakken. We've got a lot more oil in the refineries than we can refine. Are we going to stop using oil because we run out of oil or because we find an alternative to oil? Well, I'm going to argue that it will be the latter, that we'll find an alternative to oil that will stop us from using it.
Yeah, I've never really talked to you about energy. You know, how would you address our energy dilemma?
Well, our energy dilemma, we are energy independent. North America is energy independent today. You know, lots being said about that will happen within the decade. I argue it's here today. We're not importing any oil from the Middle East. The oil we import is from Mexico and Canada, and now less and less of that because of Bakken and North Dakota. We're in great shape from an energy standpoint, and I think that portends manufacturing jobs in the United States that don't currently exist. David, I'm also advocating eliminating income tax, eliminating corporate tax, abolishing the IRS, replacing all of it with one federal consumption tax, the fair tax. I think that's really the answer to American jobs, manufacturing jobs flocking back to the United States, tens of millions of American jobs being created here in this country as opposed to somewhere else.
So what do you attribute then the rise in gas prices to? It seems that they're constantly swinging up and down, and the average American is getting fed up with it. You know, you heard, I think, a Newt Gingrich's campaign. He said, you know, we can get energy down to $2.50 a gallon. You know, if in fact everything is good and dandy, how come we see these swings in gas prices?
Well, I think today, more than anything, that has to do with just the geopolitical climate and Iran and the saber rattling over Iran and the Middle East. But looking at our own production, and I am talking about North America, Canada, Mexico, the United States, we're there.
Okay. Now, Governor, you shifted my paradigm recently in a recent interview when I asked you about illegal immigration. And obviously we support strong borders here. And, you know, we don't want people illegally diluting our culture illegally. You know, I'm Hispanic myself, so I'm obviously very sympathetic to the cause. But you told me that when you were governor of New Mexico, that the illegal immigration population really didn't cost your state that much money.
Well, the analysis that I did, David, when I was governor, is I asked everybody that interfaced with immigration, whether it be legal or illegal, and that would have been law enforcement, that would have been education, and that would have been health and human services. Hey, give me a cost benefit. How much money is coming in the door? How much money is going out the door? And the 100% consensus was more money was coming in the door than was going out. Now, if we adopt the fair tax, one federal consumption tax, taxes will not be an issue when it comes to immigration, because whether you're illegal, legal, a visitor to the United States, or a U.S. citizen, nobody is going to be able to avoid paying one federal consumption tax. And then I would also like to state, and you all living in Texas, I think you understand this, we're getting the cream of the crop when it comes to workers from Mexico. These are hardworking individuals that can't get a work visa and come into this country and work. I think that's the main reason why we have so many illegal immigrants in this country. I want to create a moving line to get a work visa. And a work visa would entail a background check, because we don't want criminals working in this country. And it would entail a Social Security card that applicable taxes would get paid. Like I say, if we adopt the fair tax, taxes are a non-issue.
Now, Governor, and real quick, because I have to ask you this, and I only have 2 minutes left. What would you say, though, to the critics that say, well, what about our – I have to ask you two more questions, so it's got to be brief. What about critics who say, you know, our ER rooms are packed, you know, schools are crowded as a result of these illegals, and you're telling me, Governor, that this doesn't cost us a dime? What would you say to that?
Well, it costs us, but we're receiving more benefit than we are paying out. And I am talking about taxes that actually get paid. A lot of illegal immigrants are paying taxes by providing documentation, providing Social Security numbers that aren't accurate. Guess what? They're leaving all those taxes on the table. They're not collecting them. It's a huge factor that's really going unrecognized. So more money coming in the door than what is going out.
Now, in the last 90 seconds that we have, if you don't win this presidential election, you know, do you see yourself running in 4 years for president?
Well, you know, I think the last thing anybody wants to hear is somebody talking about running for president after before this election is even over with. So that's kind of a gag. Mm-hmm. But it's important to keep this message alive. I mean, Ron Paul, Who better to have been the spokesperson for the Liberty Movement? Well, today, maybe that's me, because I'm on the ballot in 48 states. Moving forward, there has to be a voice to this movement. It's just way too important for the two parties to continue to ignore.
Sure. Would you run as I know you don't want to get ahead of yourself, but would it be as a Republican or as a Libertarian? Because obviously you faced a lot of obstacles when you ran as a Republican.
Well, if it should somehow come about, it's the Liberty Movement. It's liberty and it's freedom and it's personal responsibility. It's balancing the federal checkbook. It's all the issues that we face. And I don't know if that really has a party name to it as much as it does just common sense and the fact that all of us recognize that we're in deep trouble. But the two parties, heads in the sand. Look, Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, they're all coming, they're all alive and well. I don't think that's the case. I think I think these are big problems that we need to address.
30 seconds left, because I know a lot of people in the Liberty Movement want to know this. Why not run for U.S. Senator in the future? I mean, you can infiltrate the system from within. You can create a coalition in the Senate. Why not run for Senator? I know you said you don't like doing the earmarks thing, but John McCain doesn't do earmarks, and he's been elected, you know, repeatedly.
Well, I think that at the end of the day, congressperson, senator is judged by how much bacon they bring home, and they're all about bringing home the bacon. I listen to ads here in this state for U.S. Senate, which is we need to balance the budget, but I'm going to hold Medicare intact. Well, the two don't add up, and regardless of where you're from, you got to bring home the bacon. That's how you get judged. That's how you get elected. And I think that's the root of all evil right now, are politicians that have made promises that are not sustainable in any way, shape, or form, and they have to be addressed.
Governor, 15 seconds. What would you like to say to the public?
Waste your vote on me. Everybody waste their vote on me. I'm the next president of the United States. Nobody is going to look, I'm going to pledge that you won't be sorry for that. And wasted vote. Wasted vote is voting for somebody you don't believe in. Wasted vote is voting for the lesser of two evils. Vote for the person that you most believe in. That's how you change things in this country.
Governor, thank you so much for your time, and we wish you the best of luck. Thanks, Governor. And hold on tight, because in just 1 minute, David Knight is going to have a hard-hitting interview with an individual who we will refer to as New Jersey Weed Man. He's an individual who was not charged on a marijuana account due to jury nullification. It's a very, very popular theory. So stay tuned for that.
While we fight to retain our liberty, while we fight to expose globalism, we have to realize we're talking about a very powerful combination of power.
Renowned author and expert Joel Scalzo breaks down the globalist plan to shut down America and stage a new world war.
In one day, America will go from day to night. And if you haven't prepared in advance, there's not enough time to prepare in 24 hours, even if you saw it that early.
Coming to the InfoWar in November is our new documentary film presentation.
Strategic relocation is a systematic way to think strategically in the future about how do I safeguard.
Joel Scalzo, Strategic Relocation.
The freeways are going to be crowded. They're going to run out of gasoline. They're going to run out of food. And then they're going to start to go north and south of those freeways.
Joel Scalzo is renowned as one of the world's foremost experts in strategic relocation and the securing of your home.
We talk about natural disasters, the health environment. We talk about pollution, the water quality. My personal experience about being in every one of these states.
Government is digging in for the organized, incremental collapse of society and world war.
The U.S. isn't building huge underground bases and bunkers because of some terrorist threat. They know that a massive nuclear attack is coming. They want that attack to come. Most people won't even be ready and won't be able to get out of town when any of these nuclear weapons fall, because there'll be absolute panic.
There is no preparedness without strategy.
What I tell people is that you do have time. Prepare wisely in advance.
This Christmas, give the gift of preparedness. Strategic Relocation, the film, with Joel Scalzo and Alex Jones.
Welcome back. Now, this election that comes up in less than a week, there are three states that have a marijuana ballot initiative on them. Colorado, Oregon, and Washington State all have initiatives. Now, these initiatives go a little bit farther than what you've seen. There are 16 states in the past that have enacted medical marijuana initiatives. But these three initiatives, go beyond medical marijuana. They go all the way to just allowing it, legalizing it, decriminalizing it, rather, as for recreational use. This is something that affects everybody, whether or not you need marijuana for medical uses or whether or not you use it recreationally. There are a lot of things going on here that that affect people, even if you're not a pot user. You know, there's an issue of prohibition. If you remember back to alcohol prohibition, prohibition corrupts the government. Prohibition creates violence, and that's what we're seeing in all aspects of the drug war. The other thing is that we have a tremendous jail population. Here in the United States, we only have 5% of the population of the world, and yet we have 25% of the world's prison population. And most of that is due to the war on drugs. As a matter of fact, violent criminals, people who like murderers, are let out frequently because they don't have enough jail space to keep in nonviolent, to keep them in when they have mandatory minimums for nonviolent offenders using marijuana. The other way that it affects you is that even if you aren't not one of the people or somebody in your family is not someone who goes to jail with these laws, you're going to be paying for it. You're going to be paying up to $50,000 a year to keep these people in jail. And finally, it's about how the government unconstitutionally denies you a right to use something that you believe that you need. How did they get the alcohol prohibition passed? Well, they did it with a constitutional amendment. They did that because at that time, our government still respected the Constitution. Today, everything is prohibited unless they expressly permit it. Well, tonight on the show, we've got New Jersey weed man, Ed Fortune. Now, Ed was in a documentary that you can pick up at our store, How the Weed Won the West. He's a longtime activist and actually a political candidate, and he's been a victim of this illegal war on drugs. And he's fought it, and he's won an important victory. And we're going to talk to Ed about that victory. It involves something that's very important to all of us, jury nullification. Well, Ed, welcome to the show. Kind of get us up to date as to what's been going on with your case. I know that you had a jury trial in May and then another one just a couple of weeks ago. Tell us a little bit about the circumstances that led up to that.
Yeah, well, I got arrested basically 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, on April Fool's Day, 2010. While I was visiting New Jersey from California, and I got pulled over by a New Jersey state trooper who eventually searched my car. He got a search warrant. He did search my car with a valid search warrant, and in my luggage was a pound of my medicine, my marijuana, and I was charged with possession with intent to distribute. And from the very beginning, I said I was taking it all the way to a jury trial, and I was invoking a jury nullification defense, which raised a few eyebrows. And I took it all the way to trial. The first trial in May of 2012, I got a hung jury. The prosecution elected to retry me again, and we just had that trial in October 2012, and I got a 12-0 verdict of not guilty. The first trial was a 7-5 a hung jury, and then so I really felt really vindicated when I got the 12-0 not guilty. The first time I expected to get a hung jury. The second time I expected to get a hung jury. So the only surprise to me, the second trial was that I got a 12-0 verdict for not guilty.
That's great. We just had a case also there in California that we talked to someone. His name is Jason Andrews, and he has a marijuana clinic. And he was totally legit, had filled out all the paperwork, and yet it was not the feds, but it was the state, the local people who came after him. In his case, it was a hung jury also, just one juror, and he bragged about jury nullification, and they're going to come after him a second and possibly a third time about that. But the thing that I find that's really important in both your case and the case of Jason Andrews is that both of you are willing to push this jury nullification thing. And that's really important. So many people, when they get charges brought against them that aren't just, they'll plea bargain out, and they don't even bother to go to trial. And you guys are standing on principle, and you're putting your confidence and your faith in your fellow citizens who are going to stand up for justice in your case. And in your case, you won. I think that's a great thing. You've been an activist for Fiji for quite a while, haven't you?
Yes, for at least 15 years. I think I first started openly talking about jury nullification in the 90s. I had a trial back in 2000 that I went well into the third day of trial, and then I succumbed to a really lenient plea offer also. I was facing 20 years that time, and right in the middle of my trial, you know, I had one juror started crying and saying she couldn't put me in prison, and another juror was shaking her head every time I talked, and the prosecution realized that I was going to get a hung jury that time and offered me a plea deal that I took, and I always regretted it. And I said if I was ever in that situation again, that I wouldn't take a plea ever again. You know, I've known for a long time that, you know, I don't care where you go. If you get 12 people and you get to argue that the law is wrong and not you, then you're going to get someone on the jury who believes that. You know, we all know what the statistics are. At this point, it's over 50% of Americans believe that marijuana should be legal. So if you can get to argue before a jury of 12 people, chances are you're going to get at least 6 of them. You know, like I said, the first time I went to trial, I got 7-5. This last time, I got 12-0. You know? But I think this message about jury nullification and arguing to the jury that the law is wrong and not you, to say you didn't do anything wrong, like admit to everything and then say you didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's the key to this, our success. We can win.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I mentioned earlier, I just said FIJA. For those people who don't know, that's the Fully Informed Jury Association. And you can go to FIJA.org and get a lot of information about what they're doing there. It's a great site. But, you know, that's something that has been, juries were designed from the beginning of our government, from people who founded this country. They realized that citizens needed to watch each other's back. And there's all kinds of quotes from Patrick Henry and other people. I mean, this is not anything new. It's something that's been taken away from us for some time. And a lot of Americans don't realize that we've always had this. This is a legal a traditional way to secure each other's liberties. A lot of people don't realize that because of the lying and the intimidation that's done by judges and the court system towards jurors and towards defendants. You know, they offer the carrot of plea bargaining to the defendants, and then they lie to the jurors and tell them that they have to judge the facts, that they can't think about the case, and then they intimidate lawyers who want to try to use as a defense. But now, in your case, did you act as your own lawyer, or did you find a lawyer that would speak up about that?
No, that's a hard thing to find a lawyer who will argue jury nullification. So I had to represent myself. I was forced to represent myself because of that, because no lawyer is going to argue that.
That's right. That's right. Well, now, I don't know if you're aware of it, but New Hampshire has just passed a law earlier this year where a judge cannot punish a lawyer for telling the jury that they can judge the law as well as the facts of the case. So that's moving it towards that way. But the amazing thing is that in many, many states, it's written in the state constitution that the function of jurors is to judge not just the facts of the case, but to judge the law.
Yes, you know, I think that was the greatest tactic in my trial. The fact that all I did was I wrote New Jersey Constitution Article 1, Paragraph 6 on a big poster board, and I put it right in front of the jurors, and I read it. And the first trial, the judge tried to stop me. We had an open argument in front of the jury, and then he allowed me to read it because I was like, why can't I read the Constitution to the jurors? But he allowed me to read it, but when I tried to like repeat it 2 or 3 times, he wouldn't let me do it. This second trial, not only did I read it, I kept referring to it, and I left it sitting right there in front of him the entire 3 days of the trial. That poster sat right in front of him, and I'll tell you what New Jersey Constitution Article 1, Paragraph 6 says. It says, in all prosecutions or indictments, and that's what I was indicted and I was being prosecuted. Mm-hmm. So it says, in all indictments or prosecutions, the truth may be given as evidence to the jurors, and the jury may determine the law as well as the facts. Mm-hmm. And that's what the case I was putting on. that if a jury has the right to determine the law as well as the facts, then I'm arguing the law is wrong, not I. I didn't do anything. You know, and what I told the jury was I felt like I was the victim. And during the voyeur, the questioning of the juries before they were picked, several of them expressed their misgivings about the war on drugs. There were a couple questions that were asked specifically about marijuana. You know, the prosecutor would have used up all of his challenges in the first 15 people if you know, if he was allowed to. So what happened was he got overwhelmed. He didn't have enough challenges to get rid of all the people that had positive opinions or opinions similar to mine. Yeah.
You know, well, the tide is against him, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's three states that have ballot issues about marijuana legalization, and not just for medical marijuana this time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's Washington and Oregon and maybe Arkansas or somebody.
It's Portland. Portland is the third one, yeah.
Right.
And you know, they just had some statistics released on Monday of this week. The FBI, in their latest statistics, said that half of all drug arrests were for marijuana, and they had so many of them. Somebody worked out, it was actually the IntelHub.com worked out, that's one marijuana arrest every 47 seconds. And they had a guy from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition that's called LEAP. He said that it's costing, not even including the cost of the trial or cost of putting people in prison, but just the cost of arresting people and arraigning them and that sort of thing, he estimated it being between $1.5 to $3 billion a year. That's something that affects everybody, you know, whether they smoke marijuana, whether they need it for health issues, whether they're doing it recreationally, or whether they're not doing any of that. They're still paying for the government that, you know, is spending money that way. I mean, it's still coming up. They're going to pay for that in taxes. But I'm sorry, you were saying that in this last case, you were able to put that up there. I think it's just amazing that judges would suppress the reading of the Constitution of the state, you know, as they did in your very first trial.
Right. Yeah, well, he attempted to. And see, that's another thing. Throughout my trial, the judge kept stopping me or trying to stop me from saying certain things. And I've watched other trials. You know what you do? You just blurt it out unexpectedly. And by the time the judge gets to, you know, trying to stop you, the jury already heard it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And you know, no matter how many times he says disregard that, you know, we're human. We hear it.
Yeah,
it gets logged in. And you know, I constantly thank the jurors. You know, and I gave them a little history lesson, too. You know, I basically told my jurors, you know, that the founding fathers of this country intended the jury to be like the fourth branch of the government, mm-hmm. that all laws had to be approved of and passed by them before they can be enacted. And, you know, in my case, you know, we got to the point where the marijuana laws are outdated and,
That's
you
right.
know, based on false information. And at this point in history, people know the truth. And the law is a lie. The law is flawed.
Yep.
And, you know, this is what I presented to them. You know, just the fact that New Jersey's criminal statute, which is what I was being prosecuted under, calls marijuana a Schedule I drug.
Right.
And we know that, you know, 16 other states have legalized marijuana for medicinal reasons, including the state of New Jersey, but I wasn't allowed to talk about it in my trial for some reason. That's a legal argument that I'm sure I'm going to win on appeal, by the way. But I wasn't allowed to talk about it, but I'm pretty sure most of the jurors knew. And then I have a bone cancer condition,
mm-hmm.
That the law that I was being prosecuted under didn't allow at all. There was no exceptions. There were no medical exemptions to our criminal statutes in New Jersey. So just the fact that I was able to talk about my personal medical problems and how I used marijuana despite the law. And I, you know, I basically said I disregarded the law all the time. I pointed out how I had marijuana, right there,
mm-hmm.
In the courtroom. I was eating brownies and cookies the whole time.
In the courtroom?
Yes, they didn't realize that it was brownies until the end.
Well, you know, one of the things that happened after this is after you were declared innocent by 12 jurors doing jury nullification. Now, after you went back to California, even though you're a fully bona fide medical marijuana patient under the California laws, you've now got the DEA coming after you, right? The feds in California. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, during the trial proceedings in the beginning, you know, 2 years ago, I was traveling back and forth from New Jersey to California, and I made no bones about it that I was going to fund my entire defense based, you know, on, you know, I was going to pay for it with my proceeds out of my dispensary. Mm-hmm. You know, I had every intention of paying for witnesses. I had every intention to get a couple expert witnesses. And the prosecutor in the case complained to the DEA in Los Angeles about me. And at some point, the DEA launched an investigation. That's what they call it in Los Angeles when they decide to target you for a closure. They say they launch an investigation because technically, you know, through federal law, it's always illegal. Marijuana is always illegal. So what happened was because of my case in New Jersey, the prosecutors complained to the big brother of Uncle Sam, the DEA, and the DEA came and raided me last December and basically put me out of business, left me penniless, took all my possessions. You know, I real quick lost my apartment that I was living in, and my shop that I was working out of, my grow operations, everything. I lost everything in a matter of a month or two after that raid.
So where does it stand right now? Are they coming? They're coming after you right now, isn't that correct? Or
yeah, well, what happened was, you know, for several months I struggled trying to survive. I still was going back and forth to court, you know, until I can get until my trial. And in between the trials, I was able to reopen the location. I mean, it took me like 10 months to do it, eight months to do it. But I opened a new location a couple weeks just before I went back for the retrial. So while I was in my retrial, you know, it was known that I had opened up a new place. Well, immediately upon winning the case, 2 hours later, while I was having beers and celebrating my victory with my supporters, I get a phone call from the DEA in Los Angeles. And basically they called me to tell me that, you know, that they saw on a Google alert, they said, that I had won my case. I suspect the prosecutor called them and told them, but
yeah,
they said a Google alert. But either way, you know, they basically made arrangements for me to come on the 29th, which was just Monday, and pick up some of my belongings from that raid last year. Hmm. You know, and it was kind of ominous to me, like, okay, you know, a year ago you raided me, you took all my stuff, you know, on the day that I win in New Jersey, you know, a month, you know, two hours after I win, the DEA calls me and tells me to come pick up some of my stuff.
Right.
So it was kind of like a little bit scary. But then the very next day, after the trial here in Los Angeles, a DEA agent named Patrick Kelly, who led the investigation, by the way, a year ago, he showed up at my new dispensary, the U.S. Collective, which is located directly across the street from General Hospital here in East Los Angeles. But he showed up and basically ordered my employees to close by the end of the day or they'd be included in the next investigation, which, like I said, they used that word investigation.
Yeah, just to threaten them.
Like a raid, right? So they threatened them. Mm-hmm. On the 22nd of October, which is 4 days after my acquittal, I get a letter from the Justice Department, from the DEA, ordering this location to close. They gave me 14 days to do it, told me to contact my lawyer. They made all their threats in the letter. I think I emailed you a copy of the letter. But, yeah, I've got until, like, November the 5th to close or – you know, they're going to launch another investigation, another raid.
Well, we certainly wish you luck with that. And if anybody wants to help you with this, tell them about your website. You're at njweedman.com. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm at njweedman.com. You can find me at Facebook the same way. But, you know, what I really need help, maybe a lawyer to help me. Mm-hmm. But I need people to support. If I'm going to stay open, I need people to come. I mean, there's plenty of growers around, plenty of vendors who who could help me weather the storm too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's we can overgrow the government easily. You know, I don't want to end up like Roger Christie in Hawaii. I don't know if you ever heard of Roger Christie, but Roger Christie was I'd say we were similar activists. Mm-hmm. You know, he in civil disobedience, and you know, he had a religious aim to his activism too. Mm-hmm. And you know, the government threw him in jail 2 years ago, basically around the same time I got arrested in New Jersey. He got arrested in Hawaii, but they didn't give him bail. So he's been there for 2.5 years, and he's holding out for a jury trial himself.
Well, we'll see if we can get some information about him. Maybe we can get him on the show. I really appreciate you talking to us. We're out of time, but what you're doing is something that helps everybody, whether marijuana is their issue or not. I mean, marijuana is something that affects everybody, whether or not it's their issue. Jury nullification is something we need to have. We've gotten into the, we've kind of been bamboozled by the legal system to think that we can count on the Supreme Court to protect our rights, but that's never been the design of this country, and it hasn't worked out very well for us in the last few years, has it, Ed?
No.
It's juries are the way to go. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. That's njweedman.com if you want to help Ed. It sounds like he needs your help, njweedman.com. Well, tonight we've had a lot of people talking about a lot of different issues, but the common thing is that whether it's elections or whether it's jury nullification or whether it's speaking out when you're unjustly singled out, as Wade Hicks was, we have to speak out. And there are ways besides elections that we can keep our freedoms. Well, be sure to pick up a subscription to prisonplanet.tv. Take a look at InfoWarsShop.com. Those are ways where you'll find out resources that are going to help you to get into the fight, help to inform your friends and neighbors to stick together. That's it for our show tonight. I'm David Knight.